If people do not see your content, if they do not pay attention to your ads, if they do not stay with them long enough to feel engaged by them, and if they do not understand your messaging and it doesn't stick to their mind, every single marketing dollar you put into that advertising may be wasted. And that's what we see in the market, is really that 70% or so of marketing doesn't have an impact. We put in $740 billion every year into marketing. Out of that, more than $500 billion might be wasted, or at least not impactful enough. So that's kind of the first ground truth that everybody needs to understand, is that marketing might have gotten this feel that it's all just trial and error. We'll just try and we'll see what happens. And if it works, it works. If it doesn't, it doesn't, because we have no tools for us to make sure that it works. And that's not true anymore. We're actually in a place for the first time ever that marketers have a toolbox or a tool set that they can use to ensure that every single asset has a bigger chance of impact.
Hello, and welcome to the latest episode of Heads Talk with me, Elaine Pringle-Schwitter, the podcast where we talk to C-level executives, leaders of institutions, and heads of multinationals. What are the current topics? They talk, we listen.
Can you imagine getting into a business or a market where you actually spend $100 billion plus on a piece of paper?
Are you kidding me?
It was like a frying pan to the head.
I got nothing against CFOs.
It was not just the job of a lifetime, it was the job of a thousand lifetimes.
My guest today is a specialist in one of the hottest topics around. While the topic is not new, it has gained significant traction in recent years, and my guest, an established C-suite professional and an expert in neuromarketing and growing business in this evolving space, will elaborate on how and why. We're going to talk about applied neuroscience, consumer neuroscience, potentially MarTech, that's marketing technology for the uninitiated, attention prediction AI, online panel testing, and predictive heat maps. This is going to be a riveting conversation today on Heads Talk, but before we get into that, here's a brief message.
Heads Talk podcast with your host Elaine Pringle-Schwitter.
Mike Storm is the Chief Operating Officer and partner at Neurons, one of the fastest growing neuromarketing businesses in the world. Over the past decade, Mike has dedicated himself to the field of neuroscience, accumulating a portfolio of over 50 projects. As an expert in understanding human subconscious behaviors, he has skillfully applied his expertise to transform the business from a research and consultancy focused entity into a thriving SaaS business. Mike's professional journey began with a foundation in sales, project management, and economics. It is this diverse experience that empowered him to play a pivotal role in scaling his current organization to its present state. Driven by a visionary outlook and leveraging the power of machine learning and AI, Mike aspires to see neuromarketing become an integral tool embraced by every marketeer worldwide in the future. We will see. So without further ado, I'd like to welcome Mike to Heads Talk. Many thanks for being with us today.
Thank you so much, Elaine. I'm happy that I'm here and we get to talk a little bit about how humans respond and how it all works within marketing.
That's great. Okay, let's get right into it with you, in your own words, and provide my listeners with a brief summary of your organization and its role, and your role, sorry, within it.
Of course, and I think it's maybe important to give a little bit of a history and a little bit of a backtrack on everything that we've done and why we're doing it, to make sure that the listeners really understand what the topic is and what it is that we're trying to accomplish here. So myself, as mentioned, is the Chief Operating Officer and also partner here at Neurons. And I've been doing this for a little more than 10 and a half years, so almost 11 years at this point. We started the company back in 2013. And the whole reason why we started the company was because Dr. Thomas Ramsoy, who is the CEO and founder of the business, had been doing academic research for about 15 years, trying to understand how does the human brain really work? How do we make decisions? How do we think or feel when we do things? And what was interesting with all of that research over those years was that he found that 90% of every single decision that we as humans, any human, not just consumers of certain brands, but anyone, even the ones listening in and myself, we all have 90% subconscious decision-making, meaning that the brain actually makes decisions for us every single day. We don't think about why we stop and look at something. We don't think or rationalize why we click on something, or even when we buy something, we may do it before even thinking about it. And the interesting thing with that is, of course, that there is a massive amount of companies out there who have the problem that they don't understand their consumers. And they don't understand them because they do not have access to their subconscious. So that's really what we have done here at Neurons, is that we have opened the box to the human subconscious through the newest technologies within neuroscience and behavioral science. And over those years, we have worked with brands like Facebook and Google and IKEA and others to really establish an understanding of how is the consumer making decisions during the day. This could, of course, be regarding advertising or web experiences, but even into the store or product. Mm-hmm. So it's very important that we have tried to take a full omnichannel approach. And through that, of course, we have scaled a team of experienced both neuroscientists and psychologists, but also people who have really been able to pivot this from, as mentioned before, a consultancy business that were helping the biggest brands in the world becoming even better at what they do, to getting into the AI space and helping every single brand in the world being better at what they do. So that's really what we have been around for, and that's what we're doing today, of course, scaling that in the global market.
Excellent. That's pretty comprehensive, and thank you for that. And we're going to expand on some of the stuff that you talk about later in this episode. But I'd be interested for you to tell me, probably because I observed this in doing my research leading up to our conversation, if you could tell my listeners about, this is one of your current projects with VTX.TV. What's the project and what were the outcomes?
Yeah, it was actually a very, very interesting project, because VDX.TV is really what we call an ad tech provider or programmatic ad provider. And what they do is make it possible for advertisers to place their ads in digital environments like CTV, so connected TV experiences, or even the web like Bloomberg or other places. Mm-hmm. And with their solutions, it is possible to make ads engaging in a very different way. This means that normally you would make an ad either as an image or a video, but in their case, you can even make the ad interactive. You can maybe draw on the ad, you can make it flip or do other things for you, making it an engaging experience to feel appetizing. So what we did with VDX was really to go into those environments and those advertising experiences, and we tried to compare how would a traditional connected TV ad, meaning very much a typical TV ad, mm-hmm. how would that actually perform compared to an optimized, more engaging or interactive connected TV ad? And even how does that empower it when you make a follow-up? So when you say you see the connected TV ad, but we can track that you did that, and now we also show you a follow-up ad on Bloomberg to be able to say, how does it actually empower the brand and the advertiser with the multi-exposures and those interactive experiences? So that was really what the whole research was about. And what we did was that we recruited 800 people from the US market. We went online and we put them through experiences using eye tracking, so mobile eye tracking and computer webcam eye tracking, making it possible for us to measure what are people looking at any given time. So we could really see not only was the ad on screen, but also are they looking at the ad while it is on screen. And I think that is very important, because advertisers over many years have been working very heavily with what we call impressions. But impressions are so hard to measure, because if the ad is on screen but nobody looks at it, the impression is really nothing. It means that you didn't get anything. So that's why the eye tracking piece is very important. But added to the eye tracking, we also believe that eye tracking is one gateway. It's what's telling you whether people see it or not. But it's not really telling you whether it's driving an emotional and motivational, and for that sake, memorable impact. Mm-hmm. So therefore, we also add what we call implicit or fast response measures and memory measures to the setup. So when people went through these experiences, they went on their own device at their own home or at the work or wherever they were, And they would go into this experience testing the emotional impact on the brand after seeing the ads in those given contexts in a natural environment. They would also be tested on the motivations and, for that sake, memories, as I said. Mm-hmm. Well, what's interesting about the outcome is really that the magnifying solution that VDX.TV has brought to market has actually made it possible for them to track where people are seeing ads in multiple locations, and therefore they can give them these follow-up exposures. Mm-hmm. And we could see massive increases. We're not talking 2-4%. We're talking 20-40% increases in anything from attention to brand impressions or brand impact, and mm-hmm. down to memory of the advertising. So it really means that with our solution, VDX could, for the first time ever, be able to show the world that their solutions actually work on everything else than only how many clicks or how many completions they get on the ads. And this is, of course, because it's driven by human responses.
You said you used 800 individuals for this experiment, and you talked about impressions. And the thing that came into my head is, so how impressionable are these individuals? And that sort of led me to think on the demographics of these individuals. Can you sort of give us a taste of whether the 800 were largely in a certain demographic group, and how impressionable were the older ones? Were they reacting in the same way as a Gen Z? I just want to get a sense of, is it a human interaction or it's kind of an age group interaction?
Fantastic question. Yeah, and it's actually a really good question, Elaine, because what we did was go in and look at a general population, but we want to look at a representative population. This means that when we went to market, we want to make sure that we are recruiting people from multicultural backgrounds. Mm-hmm. We want to ensure that we have a diverse range of ages, mm-hmm. and also that we have a good split of genders included in the mix. So this means that the representation in the data set is very much how do humans in the US, at least for that case, how do they respond to that experience? We did actually have enough participants for us to go in and start looking at age and gender. Mm. This data set was not yet published, so I unfortunately cannot go into the details of it yet. I would love to, because there are definitely some differences depending on the ages. The gender was less kind of changes, but ages, there were some impacts that we would be interested in sharing with the world.
Mm-hmm. And also, it's depending on what, or dependent on what is being advertised and where you need to target and what group you need to target. Therefore, I assume yours was across the board, as you mentioned, but perhaps if it's another organization that wants to target a certain type of group, you're not going to include all and every group unnecessarily, I assume.
100%. No, you're absolutely right. So in the case of this project, it was actually for an investment and finance brand. Mm-hmm. And that, of course, meant that we wanted to ensure that we had some screening criteria in the setup as well. Yeah. So on the demographics, we were quite broad, but on the screening criteria, we were specific, meaning mm-hmm. that we wanted people who were actually interested in changing their bank, or people who would have invested through their bank or through their financial setup in the last 6 months or something like that. So making sure that we are not just targeting anyone, but someone who would, of course, have some type of an impact or interest to the advertising.
Common interest for the experiments. Okay. This is this is such a fascinating subject. And depending on who you talk to, it can be seen as scary, enlightening, cutting edge, or just plain and simply dangerous. I want to dissect neuromarketing today with you. So first, how would you describe the current landscape of neuromarketing and its application in the business world?
It's a very, very, it's a very interesting topic to discuss, to be honest, because the current landscape is that neuromarketing has been around for, I want to say, 30, 40 years, if you go all the way back. I mean, if you go all the way back to the first EEGs and everything like that, of course, the lab environment was very heavy.
Sorry to interrupt, Mike, but what about in the 50s? Because I'm sure I've seen, they've shown experiments in the 50s,
correct,
which is some form of neuromarketing. So I think it's probably gone back further than that. I think you've been disingenuous by saying it's 30, 40 years. It might be a little bit older than that.
Correct. Yeah, you definitely have experiments back in the 50s, and you have all the way back to kind of the first EEG machines or kind of brain scanners that would come out to try to assess the human responses and the subconscious responses. Now, the problem back then was, of course, how big were those machines? How costly was it even to apply it? And how difficult was it to get something that had quality insights? Because the data would be extremely noisy and very difficult to denoise. So that's really what has happened ever since, right, Elaine? A lot has happened on the technological side, meaning that the hardware has become smaller, it has become cheaper, it's become more efficient. The software behind those hardwares have become more efficient. They are better at denoising the noise and ensuring that you get the quality measurements that you want. And it means that neuromarketing today is really in a space where we are even doing neuromarketing from a remote setup, meaning that people can put on an equipment themselves in their homes and we can measure their responses from a remote position. So it really means that it has scaled from being this heavy lab that would cost you tens of thousands, if not hundreds of thousands of dollars to run every single time, to a place where you can test your advertising for $1,000, $2,000, $3,000 a time. So it means that it's become extremely possible to do this at both the cost, but even the speed, meaning that we can run an online subconscious measurement of attention, emotion, cognition, or memory to what's advertising in any given digital platform or social platform in about 3 to 5 days, meaning that you can actually get your results with very deep insights extremely fast and to a cost of a couple of thousand dollars, right? So it really has changed the game. Everyone who were talking neuromarketing before would be the insights direction and insights people and even academia. But today it's actually available for the many. But that also takes us to the very next step, which is the AI part that you talked about, right? And I know we'll get into that a little later, but I think that's where it really gets even more scalable.
Okay, that's good. And sort of now for the bit that businesses and my listeners really want to hear about, if you could sort of explain how it helps businesses, entrepreneurs, startups grow their brands on social media, what do they have to do?
You can see it this way, that if people do not see your content, if they do not pay attention to your ads, if they do not stay with them long enough to feel engaged by them, and if they do not understand your messaging and it doesn't stick to their mind, every single marketing dollar you put into that advertising may be wasted. And that's what we see in the market, is really that 70% or so of marketing doesn't have an impact. We put in $740 billion every year into marketing. Out of that, more than $500 billion might be wasted, or at least not impactful enough. So that's kind of the first ground truth that everybody needs to understand, is that marketing might have gotten this feel that it's all just trial and error. We'll just try and we'll see what happens. And if it works, it works. If it doesn't, it doesn't. Because we have no tools for us to make sure that it works. And that's not true anymore. We're actually in a place for the first time ever that marketers have a toolbox or a tool set that they can use to ensure that every single asset has a bigger chance of impact. And that's, of course, by applying some of these upfront predictive or measurement tools, making sure that before you put your ad into market and you just cross your fingers and hope for the best, you actually know whether that ad will drive those four key responses and make the impact that you want. So I think that the truth to the brands out there, to the startups, to the enterprises, to everyone, is that the world is changing within marketing, and data is not only the lacking indicators of, you know, ROAS or ROI or click-through rates or other things like that, but we actually now have something we can call leading indicators telling us whether there is a chance of success or not.
You say 70% of marketing is a waste of money. So, you know, I'm sure lots of businesses are listening to what you're saying here. What do they do instead?
So the 70% of marketing that is wasted, of course, we can say it's maybe not every single dollar of that is completely lost, right? But it's just the fact that it doesn't have enough impact to really drive the behaviors we want. And it may even lead to, you know, negative impacts in some cases. Mm. So what we want and what we really believe in is marketers should be just as data-driven and just as informed before going to market as they are after they've been to market. We've seen this over so long time. I've been talking to so many marketers that say, yeah, but we are using our data from the last campaign to understand what we did wrong or right, maybe, and we will use that to make our next campaign better. The problem is that the next campaign might not come in 2 days. It might be in 2 or 6 months. A lot could have changed in that time. And even the learnings they may believe they have might be wrong because they actually don't know what people felt about the ad. They only knew if people clicked on it or not. And that means that we really want to challenge the way marketers think. We want to make sure that the development of an ad, of a campaign, of a marketing content is less subjective. We want to remove the internal and external biases that people have when they create campaigns. Mm-hmm. And we want to make sure that the human become a center of all of that.
Mm. Mm. So you're almost like upping the guarantee of success, aren't you? With what work you're doing.
We are guaranteed. It's a hard one to put here in wording and say we guarantee success every single time. Yeah. I would say it this way. We can guarantee by using methods, not even just ours, but any method that can help you understand the human responses before you go to market and optimize for those human responses will ultimately lead to success, especially over time. And I think that's what we've seen with many of our customers is one thing is that one campaign could get 100% increase in CTR, right? Mm-hmm. You will maybe not get 100% increase in CTR on every single campaign. That would be magical, but you may get 5, 10, 50, 30 on others. What we see on average is typically around 30 to 50% increase in performance per ad. So this mm-hmm. means in both click rates, but also in conversion. And what's great about that is that when you make advertising that actually makes people feel good, you also drive brand behaviors. So your brand impact and your brand awareness will also go up. And of course, what we want to do with all of this is not just make the marketer spend more time and add more cost to their funnels and everything like that. We actually want them to clean the slate from the bad stuff, make less ads that have higher impact, so making the funnel cheaper for the marketer. And at the same time, do it at a higher speed because you don't need to make 100 versions. You may need to make 10 versions to get the perfect setup. Mm-hmm. So we're really in the space where we believe that this will both save time, money, and drive higher ROI across all of the kind of advertisers that we have been working with. We have seen this being the effect.
Mm-hmm. Just before we sort of move into more detail, I'm wondering, have you got any successful case studies or real world examples where neuromarketing has significantly impacted a company's marketing strategy?
Definitely. So we have it back from when we did research and all of these different things. We have definitely done a lot of these research labs where we saw bigger brands taking a change to what they did, figuring out for example, that there was a function we added to Facebook at one point, and we did some research on that, and we actually found that the function was very, very engaging and taking up a lot of attention, but mm-hmm. it took away attention from the brand and from the brand exposures, actually hurting the advertising. It made the ad interesting, but it didn't make the brand interesting. And that was a very, very important feature that we actually found using neuroscience that they couldn't have seen from the in-market data, because they would see a lot of people clicking on that function looking like, oh, it's a fantastic function. We need to boost this everywhere. But they were actually able to see they would have heard their brands that were advertising using that function. So I think we have definitely seen both, you know, marketing products that have been changed. We have seen marketing strategies, marketing guidebooks for their setup and standards, mm-hmm. all being driven by neuroscience and behavioral science. Of course, today, through the AI functions that we have, the marketers use them every single day, right? And that means that their normal toolbox is to use human insights as a part of their everyday decision-making. And that changes the way you do this overall.
Okay. I'm conscious of the time. We're sort of half an hour into it, and we have a lot to cover. So if you could briefly, can you sort of explain, let's go into the details of things now, the sort of the key neuroscientific principles or techniques commonly used in neuromarketing today.
Yes, so the key neuroscientific principles that are commonly used is that we I think a lot of the discussions actually came from a technical point of view, because the neuroscientists that went to the businesses and the neuroscientists that were smart enough to run these type of things, they would typically be very caught up in the scientific or the technical side, meaning that it was all about what equipment are we using, what metric are we using, what is better than others. But in the end, it comes down to the four principles that I mentioned before. It comes down to understanding, one, the human responses, understanding the biases that we see in people, and using that four-power model. So the attention, emotional responses, cognitive responses, and memory responses. These four key measures will be the ones that will help you drive the big impact in the market.
Excellent. Importantly, and that's where the misinformation and negative views come from in this area. So perhaps you can alleviate this. What ethical considerations and challenges are associated with the use of neuromarketing techniques in advertising and consumer research today?
This one is of course something that we take very seriously, because we've been in the space for 11 years now. As I said, we have always been focusing on ethical directions. Of course, both which brands do we actually help using these solutions, but down to how do we apply these solutions. And I think one very, very important part of this is that no neuroscience measurement has ever been used to affect a single individual person. The individual is being kept safe. We are all about looking at group behaviors. So we're all about looking at larger groups of segmentation, as we said before, either Gen Pop, but also a specific investment group or something else like that, to help the brand really understand the overall group responses. So there's no way that we can, you know, impact or affect a single individual by using the neuroscience methods. That would never be something we accept. Other than that, of course, every single person that we collect data from, even today, are going through an informed consent, and they read everything about how are we using this data, why are we doing it, and also that they can always detract from the database or from the study. So we always keep these standards from the typical ethical, academic research places, and then also keeping it at the aggregated or the group level. Right. Now, when it comes down to ethics as well, we have also built what we call an ethical board. So we have an ethical board with six members that are very focused on ethics in various different directions, because we want to make sure that we are not just the subjective people making a decision on whether this is ethical or not and which direction we take. So I think that is also very important for people who either do neuroscience or neuromarketing, or who use it, is to check, does the company that you work with actually have an ethical board, or at least an ethical consideration?
I'm wondering, are there specific industries or sectors where neuromarketing is making a more profound impact, more pronounced impact, and why?
I would say this way, neuromarketing works across the whole board, right? It works all the way through, because the same brain is making a decision on buying a Snickers as taking your medicine. There is not a different brain that does one or the other thing. It's the same brain. So it works equally to measure human responses across the board. Now, where is it more impactful in terms of which type of industries or verticals have a bigger impact from it? That might be something that really depends on how much data that industry has on people in the first place. because we see a lot of industries, for example, you know, financial industries or pharmaceutical industries, which have very limited information about people and very limited information about how to do things better to make people feel better. And they actually see a massive impact from using these solutions because they have no way of getting data on people. And again, they're not here to trick people. They're here to build stuff that people understand, that people they want to, of course, use depending on the needs. And the same goes for all of these places where there is a lack of data. So I think those are the industries that see the biggest impact from it. But it is every single industry. We have worked across the board from FMCG, retail, all the way to tech and to pharmaceutical and financials. So it's all the way through that we can use these tools.
Okay, let's move on. We've pretty much, you know, we spent some time talking about newer technology and neuromarketing today. Let's look at what's in store for the future. If you could tell me and my listeners about the trends and all the emerging technologies you foresee shaping the future of neuromarketing in the coming years.
If we were talking together, Elaine, maybe a year and 2 months ago, the big answer would have been the technologies will be smarter. We will be faster at collecting the data from people's own homes. We will have integrations in smartwatches or other places to get these type of neuromarketing data. Mm-hmm. But now that we're sitting on the other side of the AI era, the big boom that has happened in the last year, we actually believe that anything out there will be impacted by AI in one way or another. And that's, of course, also why we are applying AI to our solutions. Mm-hmm. So we believe that neuromarketing will become something that is rather we collect a lot of data because we still need to do that, using the most efficient, the fastest, and the best ways to do it. Mm-hmm. But the data that we collect will generally only be for specific brands that really want the data themselves from real humans. Now, what we will use that data for is actually to build artificial intelligence that can replicate human responses, meaning that instead of putting an ad in front of a person, we can put the ad in front of an AI, and the AI will actually tell you how people will feel about this ad using all of that data we have collected over the years and still keep collecting. So I think that will really be what will change in the future, is that the data will never disappear. We need that data and we need to keep adding data, but the artificial intelligence will completely change the game because we can put it in the hands of every single marketer all around the world every day.
And whereas I think when we talked earlier, you talked about experiment using 800 individuals. If you use artificial intelligence, you can use 8 million different scenarios in order to create the results you're looking for. So that's something to look forward to. This question I like, it's a bit like a crystal ball question, but perhaps you have seen developments or are seeing developments to enlighten my listeners. So what potential breakthroughs, you know, AI, generative AI aside, in neuroscience, do you think will have the most significant impact on neuromarketing?
In our case, and again, we cannot foresee the future, right? So a lot can happen in the AI space in the next year or two. We've seen so much in just the last year. But I think one thing that will happen in the content creation or even in the communication space is that agents will speak to agents. And when I say agent, I mean an AI. This means that we are going to be in a situation where I am going to ask my AI agent to go and buy something for me, install it in my business, and put it up for operations. And it does all of that work by itself. Mm. Now, added to that, there will be agents on the other side. And those agents will be receiving those calls from the agent I started. And they will be salespeople, but sales agents. They will be customer success people, but customer success agents. And all of these different agents will utilize functions of human insights and human responses to be able to interact and engage as humans. Otherwise, they will just become machines. So I think that the future, and I'm not talking about the machines taking over the world at all, I don't think that's going to happen, I think humans are the center of what we see here. But I think there are very many actions and functions and areas that will be automated through AI setups. But it will be hard to do if you don't have the data and the knowledge to be able to build it. And that's why you also need data on humans.
Mm-hmm. Excellent. I asked this question last year to the incredible Nita Farahani, and the professor of law and the author of the best-selling book, The Battle for Your Brain, Defending the Right to Think Freely in the Age of New Technologies. The professor of law of Duke University, by the way. It's in the data protection space, and it's about brain data. There's a lot of concern and calls for stringent regulations on this. And we hinted a little bit about it, but I'm going to expand with this question. As neuromarketing continues to evolve, how do you envisage addressing issues relating to consumer privacy, data security, and brain data security?
I think as we are seeing in the area, the cookies are starting to disappear, right? And we're starting to see that personal tracking and personal data tracking becomes less and less. And it is good, to be honest. It is good that we don't have super giant technology companies that knows everything about everyone, because it does create a bias and also an unfortunate advance for these companies. Mm. So I think in general, the data privacy setup is something that we need to value, and we need to see it as something that we have to do. When it comes to the brain data side, of course, as I said before, we never work with individual brain data points. We never look into how John, who is sitting in Alabama, looking at his phone, is responding to a given ad, and we change the ad just to make him want to buy that product even more and almost suck mm-hmm. him into it, even though he doesn't want it. So that's a very, very important part of this, is that we do not go to the individual level. A second part of this is that we want to make sure that neuroscience will inform and impact. It will not be the part that changes the ad directly for you in the moment. We cannot use that person's brain data to make those ads better and more driving, because that would ultimately make it non-ethical. So it's important to think about that we are not going to go individual. We're not going to use it to drive wrong behaviors. And also, when it comes to it, we have, of course, always ensured the one thing is informed consent. But the other thing is that none of our data points in our database can be related back to a person. So if you go into our database, every single data line will have a random ID, and mm-hmm. the random ID will have been used maybe 1,000 times. This means that every single project that we have run over the years have an ID, which is 4 digits. So let's say 1,001, but that 1,001 will be used again in the next project, meaning that you can never go back and find out which of these 1,001s is John. Mm-hmm. You can never know which one John really is in the database. And I think that is important, because we never want to connect the individual person of the world to the brain data, because in the hands of the wrong people, that could actually create a very big problem.
You know, while we have confidence in what you're saying and in Neurons, your organization, you know, based on what you've said and, you know, reassuring us in the terms of what you do, we cannot say that for other organizations, can we?
We can't. and it's always hard to know what is the real, you know, strategic plan behind people's mm-hmm. actions, and what is their end goal with it. And we try to make sure that we keep our thoughts about empowering, engaging the consumer, and not just about making the brands sell more. Mm-hmm. That's not really our vision. We're not here to make Coca-Cola sell more Coca-Colas. We're here to make every consumer have better brand impressions with the brands they like mm-hmm. and the brands they want to spend time with. Mm-hmm. We want to make sure that the consumer in the end, or the customer, the human, if you want, is really the one that should be centered around here, and not about the brands. Of course, the brands are using this as a tool to improve their performance, but ultimately that performance improvement should come because people actually like what they're being shown more. They actually feel better about it, and it makes a lot more sense to them. So ultimately, they feel better about making their choices.
Mike Storm, a fascinating talk on neuromarketing today. Many thanks for your time and insights.
Thank you very much, Elaine. It was a pleasure and a pleasure to be here. I do see that you're really speaking to a lot of great individuals and professionals in the industry. So I really appreciate that.
Thanks for joining me today on this episode of Heads Talk. Don't forget to subscribe to the show via my website, elainepringle.com/Heads Talk, or wherever you get your podcasts. Finally, I'd like to thank our sponsors, guests, and you for helping to make the show possible. Please join me next time where I'll be featuring more executives, C-suite leaders, and heads of multinationals.
Heads Talk podcast with your host, Elaine Pringle-Schwitter.